what kind of music that is.
Turbo folk.
And the transgender before, what was that?
Hmm?
The transgender, what was that?
Well, she's not transgender, but Jelena Karleusz.
Yeah. And the other?
Tarkan is a Turkish star, and Serbian another big star is Ceca. Svetlana Ražnatović Ceca. She was the wife of this famous Arkan. He was accused for war crimes in Den Haag. So.
And then he was killed?
Yes, yes. He was killed in these fights between mafia, so...
And is it very famous to listen to transgender music in the gay scene here?
It is... Turbo folk is very popular in Serbia. So, yes.
I don't like that.
I don't like to be recorded.
Kafani čašu da razbiješ, znaš Pevačicama bakšiš da daš Pa ih onda sve redom otiraš Muškarčina, gupčina Takvog mama hoću ja I suknjice, i bluzice Da ću sve za te ručice Jer hoću ga, baš takvoga Joj, mamice
Ja, hallo, hier ist Felicia Herrschaft heute mit einer Sendung über die Kunstszene in Belgrad. Und zwar war ich dort im Februar diesen Jahres und habe eben mit einigen Künstlern, Kuratoren und auch mit Michael Martens gesprochen, der Korrespondent ist der FAZ in Belgrad für den Bereich Südosteuropa. Und das Interview über seine Einschätzung des aktuellen Konflikts und der politischen Entwicklung, das hören wir jetzt zuerst, bevor es dann weitergeht mit den Gesprächen mit den jeweils Kulturschaffenden.
Ein Abwarten, das man sehen kann in der Haltung von Ahtisaari, indem wir die, das aktuelle Papier über den Status des Kosovo präsentiert wurde? Oder wie könnte man jetzt diesen Prozess, diesen politischen Prozess, der damit wieder angestoßen wurde, einschätzen?
Also Herr Ahtisaari hat seinen Teil der Arbeit zunächst einmal gemacht. Er hat ein sehr umfangreiches Lösungspapier vorgelegt, das alle Aspekte einer Lösung umfasst, einer möglichen Lösung. Man darf ja nicht vergessen, das, was Ahtisaari vorbereitet, ist keine Vorgabe für den Sicherheitsrat, sondern nur eine Vorlage. Mhm. Der kann letztlich selbst entscheiden. Ahtisaari ist nur Vermittler und Sondergesandter des Generalsekretärs. In diesem Papier finden sich einige Dinge, die die Kosovo-Albaner nicht besonders mögen, zum Beispiel die sehr umfangreichen Selbstverwaltungsrechte für die serbische Minderheit, im Kosovo. Aber es findet sich natürlich in der Hauptsache etwas, was Belgrad nicht mag, nämlich die Unabhängigkeit des Kosovos. Die ist zwar nicht wörtlich erwähnt in diesem Lösungstext, aber Attribute von Staatlichkeit kann man aus allen einzelnen Passagen dieses Lösungsvorschlages durchaus herauslesen, und das erklärt natürlich auch die heftige Reaktion der Regierung hier in Belgrad, nachdem das Papier öffentlich geworden ist.
Das heißt, in welcher Weise äußert sich Staatlichkeit? Also wie wird dem Kosovo entgegengekommen?
Also wenn Sie sich vorstellen, dass, wenn es nach Ahtisaari ginge, wir wissen ja nicht, ob es dann letztlich nach ihm gehen wird, dass Kosovo eine eigene Armee haben soll, eigene Grenzschutztruppen, die Möglichkeit, internationalen Organisationen beizutreten, dann haben wir eben sehr viele Elemente, die einen Staat ausmachen, auch wenn er in dem Papier selbst derzeit noch nicht so genannt wird. Nur, der UN-Sicherheitsrat, der über das Papier befinden soll, kann ohnehin nicht entscheiden, ob andere Staaten dieses Kosovo, wie es denn nun ist, als unabhängig anerkennen sollen oder nicht. Das ist eine bilaterale Entscheidung von Staat zu Staat. Der UN-Sicherheitsrat könnte aber, indem er das Ahtisaari-Papier annimmt, die Grundlagen dafür schaffen, dass andere Staaten das Kosovo als Staat wiederum anerkennen.
Und warum wurde dann aber in dem Papier nicht direkt von Unabhängigkeit oder auch dann Souveränität des Kosovo gesprochen, weil nach den Wahlen wurde eben von amerikanischer Seite auch gesagt, dass diese Unabhängigkeit ja eigentlich schon die ganze Zeit gegeben ist, und so deutlich wurde es bisher nicht gesagt. Plötzlich reden alle davon, das Kosovo ist eigentlich unabhängig, aber die Souveränität fehlt.
Es kommt, die Frage ist halt, unabhängig von wem? Von Serbien ist Kosovo in der Tat de facto seit Juni 1999 unabhängig. Seit dem Ende des Luftkrieges der NATO gegen Jugoslawien, gegen Milosevic's Jugoslawien, das damals ja nur noch aus Serbien und Montenegro bestand, hat Serbien keine Handhabe mehr in großen Teilen des Kosovos, abgesehen von den serbischen Enklaven und dem serbisch besiedelten Nordteil um Mitrovica. Das heißt, und deswegen sagen einige eben in der Tat, es geht ja gar nicht um Unabhängigkeit, die besteht, man muss sie nur aus einem de facto in einen de jure Status überführen. Deswegen diese Unterscheidung zwischen Unabhängigkeit und Souveränität. Vermieden wurde dieses Wort in den Vorschlägen Ahtisaaris deshalb, weil man im Sicherheitsrat natürlich auf die Russen und auch auf die Chinesen angewiesen sein wird, um das Papier durchzubekommen. Und die Russen würden mit Sicherheit nicht einem Papier zustimmen, in dem das Kosovo explizit als unabhängiger Staat bezeichnet wird.
Und jetzt wird ja auch häufiger davon gesprochen, dass und möglicherweise ist deshalb das Ahtisaari-Papier nur eine Vorlage, weil man vermeiden will, dass das Kosovo als eine Vorlage auch dient für andere Staaten, die unabhängig werden wollen.
Für andere Regionen, ja.
Regionen. Mhm. Und kann man das damit verhindern? Also das
ist ein Beispiel. Die Frage ist in der Tat, das berührt diese Frage, ist das Kosovo, ist die Lösung, ist diese Entwicklung ein Präzedenzfall fürs Völkerrecht oder nicht? Die Amerikaner und überhaupt der Westen behaupten, Kosovo sei ein Fall sui generis, sei also nur aus sich heraus erklärbar. Mir scheint, das Einzige, was sui generis ist, ist zu versuchen, das zu einem einzigartigen Fall zu erklären. Es ist natürlich, es gibt viele Regionen in der Welt, die sie trotz aller Unterschiede im Detail durchaus mit dem Kosovo vergleichen können. Es gibt, wenn wir uns das Kosovo ansehen, wir haben es zu tun mit einer Bevölkerungsmehrheit von mehr als 90%, die, um es jetzt mal vereinfacht zu sagen, behauptet, durch die Drangsalierung und Repressalien der Vergangenheit sei es ihr nicht mehr zumutbar, mit den Serben in einem Staat zu leben. Mir scheint, die Tschetschenen, die Kurden, die Uiguren könnten durchaus Ähnliches über die Chinesen, die Russen beispielsweise oder die Türken behaupten, wenn sie nach diesem Muster handelten. Also ich halte es nicht für allzu fern der Realität, durchaus zu sagen, ja, das kann ein Präzedenzfall sein, natürlich.
Könnte auch angemessen sein, manchen Leuten.
Ja.
wenn es nicht gerade zum Spielball dann der Russen wird, die Georgien schwächen wollen.
Genau, das ist natürlich ein Problem. Diesen Präzedenzfall kann man um 180 Grad drehen. Man kann sagen, wenn wir beim Beispiel Russlands, das Sie jetzt genannt haben, bleiben, Tschetschenien ist der Präzedenzfall. Und dann hätten wir also eine Region, die von Russland wegstrebt, die sich an dem kosovarischen Modell orientiert. Man kann aber auch sagen, Abchasien, Transnistrien in Moldau sind Präzedenzfälle. Und das sind wiederum Regionen, die zu Russland hinstreben. Mhm. Insofern haben wir es eben mit einem sehr komplizierten völkerrechtlichen und politischen Geflecht zu tun. Und selbstverständlich werden verschiedene politische Gruppen den Fall des Kosovos jeweils in ihrem Sinne als Präzedenzfall zu interpretieren versuchen.
Und wenn man sich diesen Prozess ansieht, ein Artikel, den Sie auch geschrieben haben, hat die Politikfähigkeit in dem Sinne des Kosovo auch nochmal anders dargestellt, indem viele derjenigen, die eben in hohen Positionen im Kosovo gewesen waren, im Rahmen der internationalen Organisationen, die dort sind, jetzt tatsächlich zu politischen Beratern geworden sind, dann von den jeweiligen Politikern auf dem Czechow zum Beispiel. Ja. Was bedeutet das eigentlich, auch wenn Czechow zum Beispiel dann einen offenen Brief in der FAZ formulieren kann, wie steht es in einem Verhältnis? Also Kritik eigentlich an dieser Politikfähigkeit und gleichzeitig ein offener Brief, der wahrscheinlich nicht von Czechow selbst geschrieben wurde, in der FAZ veröffentlicht.
Genau. Also das Phänomen, dass Politiker sich Berater holen, ist ja nun nichts, was auf dem Balkan begrenzt ist. Der Fall des Kosovo ist deshalb ein bisschen auffällig, weil wir hier es ja letztlich mit einem Protektorat der Vereinten Nationen seit 1999 zu tun haben. Und weil einige Mitarbeiter aus der Protektoratsbehörde direkt gewechselt sind in die Regierung, über die sie vorher sozusagen Kontrollfunktionen ausübten. Das macht es aus Gründen, die vielleicht jetzt zu weit für den Zweck, denn finde ich ein wenig, ich hielte es besser, wenn man irgendeine Regelung gefunden hätte, die es Mitarbeitern der UN-Mission im Kosovo, der UNMIK, wenigstens für einen bestimmten Zeitpunkt nach ihrem Verlassen dieser Mission untersagt, als Berater auf die Regierungsseite zu wechseln.
Aber das ist eben nicht
der Fall. Das ist nicht der Fall, nein.
Ja. Aber wird das dann zum Beispiel die Position des Kosovo verbessern? Also wenn jetzt viele derjenigen, die sie vorher kontrolliert haben, auf ihrer Seite sind?
Naja, ich das sind Fälle, die ich interessant finde. Ich würde das nicht überbewerten. Ich glaube nicht, dass das... diese Fälle sind als Einzelfälle interessant. Ich glaube nicht, dass das auf die Gesamtsituation des Kosovos nur einen so großen Einfluss hat.
Ja.
Sobald das Kosovo Unabhängigkeit erlangt haben wird, werden die eigentlichen Probleme dieser Region in den Vordergrund treten. Und das sind eben ganz eindeutig wirtschaftliche Schwierigkeiten.
Ja.
Wir haben es in Kosovo mit einer jungen Bevölkerung, statistisch der jüngsten Bevölkerung Europas zu tun. Es drängen Jahr für Jahr Zehntausende junge Menschen auf einen Arbeitsmarkt, der sie nicht aufzunehmen in der Lage ist. Diese Menschen sind früher, das ist ja die Geschichte des Kosovos, durch das traditionelle Ventil sozusagen ausgestoßen worden, nämlich durch die Abwanderung. In alten jugoslawischen Zeiten konnten sie in Belgrad oder in Ljubljana als Gastarbeiter arbeiten oder auch natürlich in den reichen Staaten Nordwesteuropas. Das Ventil Belgrad ist geschlossen seit dem Krieg. Kein albanischer Gastarbeiter kann mehr nach Serbien kommen. Das Ventil Europa ist nicht ganz geschlossen, aber ist durch die Schengen-Regelung eben auch nicht mehr so weit offen, wie es mal war. Und da baut sich ein Druck auf, der in den kommenden Jahren, glaube ich, den zu mindern, in den kommenden Jahren das Hauptproblem darstellen wird im Umgang mit dem Kosovo.
Und im Verhältnis zu Serbien, wenn sich jetzt in Serbien eine neue Regierung jetzt bildet, wie in Serbien hat man doch auch ähnliche Probleme, aber wahrscheinlich nicht die Probleme einer zu jungen Bevölkerung.
Nein, im Gegenteil. Das sind eher die Probleme, die wir aus Deutschland und anderen reichen Ländern kennen. Die haben das Problem einer zu alten Bevölkerung, einer überalternden Bevölkerung.
Und das ist natürlich dann interessant, weil die Länder ja so nacheinander
kriegen. Man könnte meinen, sie ergänzen sich gut, ja. Aber ja. Das erwarte ich für die nächsten Jahrzehnte erstmal nicht.
Und die Regierungsbildung, die jetzt erfolgen wird, wie werden sich da diese Parteien einigen? Also die Radikalen sind ja doch extrem stark.
Das ist eben die Frage, ob es überhaupt eine Regierung jetzt geben wird. Es gibt Beobachter, die durchaus nicht ausschließen, dass wir ohne eine Regierung bekommen zu haben, abermals zu Wahlen schreiten hier. Es ist derzeit für viele Politiker hier nicht attraktiv, sich vorzustellen, eine Regierung zu führen, denn wir steuern ja in den kommenden Monaten höchstwahrscheinlich auf jene Phase zu, in der das Kosovo endgültig abgetrennt wird von Serbien. Und in dieser Phase möchte kein Politiker in den Augen des Volkes der Verantwortliche sein. Das heißt, es könnte sein, dass wir hier eine künstlich in die Länge gezogene Interimsphase ohne Regierung oder nur mit einer amtierenden Regierung erleben.
Und das ist natürlich auch für diesen politischen Prozess eigentlich nicht sehr...
Das ist überhaupt nicht gut für den politischen Prozess. Es ist nicht gut für die Entwicklung in Serbien, weil ja auch wenn wir nur eine technische Regierung haben, viele Projekte stehen. Eine technische Regierung kann eigentlich nur sagen, die Tagesarbeit machen, kann aber keine weitreichenden Entscheidungen treffen. Es sagen jetzt schon Leute, dass in den Ministerien Entscheidungen liegen, die eben nicht abgearbeitet werden können, weil die derzeitigen Minister keine weitreichenden Entscheidungen treffen können.
Ja. Interessant wäre noch, weil sie ja hier auch.
Nagovori majka svog jedinca da se ženi, da u vojsku pođe s prvom lastom sa jeseni, samo tebe nisam mogla ja. Nagovori ljubav ratnika da frulu svira, srce bogataša da sirotu dragu bira, samo tebe nisam mogla ja. Thank you.
Ja, um jetzt weiter in die Kunstszene einzusteigen, ein Gespräch mit Ivana von der Kontextgalerie, die 2006 eröffnet wurde in Belgrad und dort eben seit einem Jahr arbeitet und auch Künstler aus dem Kosovo eingeladen hat, wie zum Beispiel Alban Mucha und Triton Hajredini. Ja, jetzt hören wir eben, wie sie angefangen haben.
Started after some months, we were invited by the Center for Contemporary Arts to take over the organization of Mangelos Award. They were organizing it for 5 years and then for 4 years, and then they asked us if we would be interested because these people are mostly now in the Museum of Contemporary Arts, and so they were thinking that it would be more logical that we are doing that as a space that is dedicated to young people and young artists than that museum is organizing it. And they offered us to do that together with DESORG, which is one artistic association from Belgrade. And we accepted it, and then that's how we were organizing Mangelos Award. This was the first fifth year, and it was for us open to change the concept and to change things. And we, for example, change it in the way how the artist is selected. We also invited artists who are applying to vote. So they were like one member of the jury. Mm. And this year, probably the exhibition, because the Mangelos Award is part of Young Visual Artist Award, which exists in 8 countries. It's Czechia, Slovakia, and ex-Yugoslavian countries. And it's founded by American Foundation for a Civil Society from New York, and they plan to spread it also in the future in Romania, Bulgaria, and Albania. And last year, they always organize a joint exhibition of all winners. I mean, always, since 2 years ago. And last year, it was in Pristina. So we were in October, we were there for the exhibition of all winners from all countries. In Pristina. This was in October. And this year, we will organize it in Belgrade. So we think that maybe we will also organize our exhibition of the finalists in the same time when we will organize this joint exhibition. We are negotiating, but it is very much possible to organize it in the Salon of the Museum of Contemporary Arts.
Mm-hmm. And when you started, how did you become interested in art?
I studied art history and Vida as well. Mm-hmm. And while we were studying, we also sometimes collaborated with the Museum of Contemporary Arts, like on the exhibitions, doing guided tours, or, I don't know, in Student Cultural Center, we were invited sometimes to organize some exhibitions. I mean, it was not that often, and we studied, help in some coordination work and or organizational. So we were somehow, we knew some people that offered us, that gave us an opportunity to work. I mean, to volunteer. It was, sometimes we worked, but mostly it was like volunteer. Mm-hmm. And after that, we met the director and she offered us. And this is also very specific, because it's really very good that this happened, because we really did not believe that it is possible to start something like that, because it's very hard to get the space, and there are a lot of people in Belgrade and organizations who are doing interesting things, but they have no space to show that. And and our director, she was really very open, and she's an old woman, and she's like resigning, but she somehow, because it's very hard to to finance this space, and she also wanted to broaden activities and to show to the municipality and to the city what we are doing. And because they don't support it, they give very small money, and it's not possible anymore to survive out of these children programs. But they still don't react. So we don't know very. We are not sure how we will continue. Because it's a lot of money to pay. I mean, there are not many people who are employed. It's like few. I'm not. I'm doing this like if we can get honoraries through the projects, which is usually not possible because nobody give you for that. But anyway, if you think what you could do, if I would be also employed in some other place, I would not have this possibility to run the space and to make the program. So it's really, I'm very happy, and this is really very big luck. This is not something that, you know, usually you have to know somebody and to have some connections, and this is really, I'm really happy that this happened to, so that people also can see that such things can happen, that you meet somebody and this person is open and, you know, just invite you.
And how do artists from Belgrade, for example, reflect now that that they are Serbian artists with a special history now as victims and aggressors on the same at the same time? Are there some artists who, or is that a subject here in how artists work?
I would have to think. It's not that history is very much reflected, like recent history. It's not a topic still. There are some works that I know, because now we are making one video program, and we were... I mean, there are... I really... But I think it's not... you could not say that it's really a topic. There are some artists who are... who had some works that are reflecting the topics, but... for example, I could tell you I know one video. The artist is Ivan Grubanov, and also he had other works that are very much reflecting the political situation and recent history. He has one video. It is called A Guy I Know, and it is about a guy who went in Kosovo in the time of war by his own will. He just joined the army because he was junkie and it was bombing, and he made one video, like interview with that guy. And also he made he was present in the Den Haag when Milosevic had the protest, and he was making a drawing like he was a visitor. It is called A Visitor, that work. It's a series of drawings, and he had the exhibition in the Salon of Museum of Contemporary Arts. You can take a look at the catalog. They publish it. And there is one artist that is called, his nickname is James Dean, like James Dean, and this is like, this name, there is a history of this name in Serbia, like James Dean, and they it's James Dean, but when you read it in Serbian, so he has a very specific sense of humor, and he always, so that's also how this name came. And he made one video about the bombing and about the American aeroplane that was hit by Serbian army and it fell down.
Yeah.
I don't know the term, but and this was called this aeroplane was called Invisible, and it was like very big myth about it, like it's not possible to see it with radar, and it's not possible to, and then like they managed to put down one of that Invisible. It's F-117, something like that. And he made a video about guy who was in these forces that were doing that, and you know they were very proud, like you know, like they did, like they managed to fucked up the whole NATO army. So it's very much how in that time, you know, how such things were pushed and, you know, like something very big and something that showed how we are strong and but actually it's nothing. Mm. And it's also interesting because, and this in this video, this Yamezdin, his name is Alexander Yestrovich, then he's negotiating with a guy who is like officer in this section of the army, if he can give him part of the aeroplane so that he can exhibit it as a sculpture, and, you know. And but it's also, I know in the museum of aeroplanes or something like that, mm-hmm. in the Belgrade airport, there is a part of that, and they write it like very special notes on that, you know, like they have very important exponent. So it's, but I don't know, I think it's not, to come back at your question, there are some works, but I would not say that it's really big topic. Hmm. There was one action, this was, that was organized by one group of activists and artists when Srebrenica topic was in public. And they organized the billboards. It was very hard for them to find a company that wanted to collaborate with them. They made the photos about Srebrenica, and you know, that was like that were saying that we should think about rethink the past, and that should we take it, that we should not ignore these facts, and so it was a story like that, and so it was like photos and messages on the billboards. And it was really very big reaction by the people in the public, like they were, some nationalists were putting graffiti on it that were like very strange. So it's not, I don't know, I mean, this was like the biggest action that I know, this was in public space. This organization is called Biro, this who organized that billboard mm-hmm. project.
Če sem bila prvi put kod doktora I čik pogodišta mi je rekao ostavi tu budalu svaki drugi bi se takvo ženi već odavno predao Čuski dan spavam ceo dan Kažu mi da sam načisto posrnula Kafane, diskoteke, žurke splavo mi Ma ja sam samoj sebi u lice pljunula Dok u znoju bilo koju noćas negde maziš Ja bih opet bila tebi po kome ti gaziš Dok u znoju bilo koju noćas negde maziš Ja bih
Ein weiterer Aspekt kultureller Aktivitäten in Serbien, in Belgrad, ist das Kulturzentrum in Belgrad, das von Stanca Jordanovic geleitet wird. Und mit ihr konnten wir auch ein Gespräch führen. Jedes Jahr wird der Oktobersalon ausgerichtet von internationalen Kuratoren. Der letzte Oktobersalon in Belgrad 2006 wurde von René Bloch kuratiert. Und darüber sprechen wir, über diese kulturellen Aktivitäten.
Celebrating our 50th anniversary, so we are quite an old institution.
Yeah.
Yes, with a lot of history, and actually we were organized in late 50s as a kind of institution which was the main mission of our institution was to present our culture abroad. Belgrade scene and also ex-Yugoslavia scene, so center was dealing with big exhibitions which were touring around Europe and world. For instance, some big exhibitions about Tito's life and work, for instance. Mm. Apart from that side of the program, we used to organize contemporary art cultural program, like visual art exhibitions and also music program. We used to have a big library and a reading room within the center, which was very important for the period of 60s, when there were not a lot of foreign journals and magazines and newspapers. Of course, afterwards, that reading room was closed, but it was a very important place in Belgrade for that period. Later, we started the film program, so we have art cinema of our own, where we organize different film festivals dealing with national cinematographies. So we have, let's say, 4 to 5 small festivals within the year, and then we also are co-organizers of the documentary film festival and the art film festival. So that's about the film program, and we also belong to the Euroimage network of the cinemas who are presenting mostly European films. And we have 2 galleries. We have Visual Art Gallery, which is dealing with contemporary art, and the Photography Gallery, which is devoted to photography exclusively. We organize about 40 exhibitions per year, more or less. And we are organizer of this biggest event, October Sound, which is one of the most important visual art events in our country. We have a literary program where we promote and present new titles, and we also organize some debates about certain important, that we think important, social, political, and other topics. So that's it.
Yeah, and October Salon, when did that start?
Well, it started also almost 50 years ago.
Yeah.
It started in at the beginning of 60s, but it was one of the most important local visual art events. But since 3 years ago, it became international. So since then, we have international exhibitions with international or local curators, or sometimes working in a way of a dialogue situation.
Mm-hmm. So the last October Salon was organized by René Bloch.
Last October Salon was curated by René Bloch and his assistant from Kastel, Barbara Heinrich, with an assistant also from Belgrade, Aleksandra Bjelica.
Yeah.
And before that, we had a local curator which did exhibition Darko Radosavljević together with the Macedonian curator. And the year before that, Anna Rotenberg from Poland. And for this year, we prepare Salon with the curator from France, actually Hungarian origin, Laurent Hedgy. So we hope that we'll have another good exhibition this autumn.
Yeah, so it's every year. Yeah. And you are financed by...
By the city.
By the city. And do they want to get influence maybe on what you are doing here, or how...
Not really.
How are you...
We are actually preparing program for each year, and we prepare it in late autumn. Not really late, beginning of October. And then at the beginning of the next year, usually they decide about the budget. Now it's a little bit postponed because of these elections that we just had. So we are still waiting for final answers, and basically I worry most about the budget. Because that is the most important thing, and that's how we decide what are we going to do or not. But there are not really any kind of political pressure or political influence. So money is always the most important thing.
Yes.
Of course, we are all, since we are founded by the city, we are in a way elected, and the decision about my post is the decision that was made within the city assembly. So, in a way, if that is a kind of influence, there is an influence, because we are public institutions. So it's not an independent association or independent institution. So we are city founded, and in a way we are employed by the city of Belgrade.
And how would you reflect this process of democratization, which could maybe, which happens probably in every institution in Serbia? Or you would, how would you say, what is really
what
going
is the
on?
Biggest change?
Yeah, or what kind of changes, which...
Well, actually, the biggest problem that we faced in last, let's say, two decades was the problem of isolation, and for us that was the biggest problem, because we lost somehow the institutional relationship with our partners from abroad, and now we are trying to reestablish that kind of network. So that's what. What's really missing, and which is now reestablishing, and we actually lost almost all of our contacts on the institutional level. So during the last, let's say, 15 years, only the non-governmental scene was really active in a way, but now it's coming back to its normal situation. So I think it's going to be better. And it is, but the changes are really maybe mostly visible in the changes of generations. New people are coming, younger people are coming, young professionals are coming, and working more and more. So it's in a way a more active scene. And I think that a lot of new galleries, spaces are opening, so the culture scene is very active. So I think the more the merrier, the biggest offer you have, the better choice you can make and the better quality you can get.
Mm.
But I think that the cultural life is quite active.
Mm.
But always could be better.
Yeah, so this is an ongoing process after...
Yes, and it's very slow. And you also have some inherited habits, old ways, how people used to work. And then you can't just change everything in 2 years. Or it's a very slow process.
Mm.
And I think that's the process that happened probably everywhere. Especially that we have that burden of wars and big political pressure. I think because of that, maybe it's a little bit slower than we would like to be. We all expected that thing would change much, much faster.
Mm.
More faster than it is, but...
Mm.
It's just the subjective wish, but I think that it now I think it can't be done that fast.
Because of now the election happened.
Because of elections, because of the problem of Kosovo, because of all that decisions that reflects everything else. You cannot live without the idea of what is happening around you.
Mm.
I mean, we are just a part of the society and the part of the bigger system, so everything reflects.
Yeah.
The problem, the political, the social, everything, all problems are present, so you cannot just close your eyes and do something nice and easy.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's also very difficult. I mean, I think that... if we are talking about the subject that you, the project that you just mentioned that you plan to do, I think that you'll face a lot of problems to develop it in the way that it might be best to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ja, nach dem Gespräch über das Kulturzentrum in Belgrad, eine Künstlerin, Anna Adamović, die in Belgrad lebt und arbeitet und zum Beispiel Arbeiten macht wie Madeleine, wo sie Kinderfilme zusammenschneidet zu einer bestimmten Form der Erinnerungsarbeit und Orte entdeckt, die fiktiv sind, obwohl sie real sind. Und genau diese Fiktion ist, denke ich, interessant für Orte, die sich gerade in der Umwandlung befinden und eigentlich Orte sind, die in allen Teilen der Welt zu finden sind. Das hören wir jetzt.
I started making the documentary work back in the 90s, obviously, because we all grew up in the atmosphere of war. And for me as a documentary photographer, that was like the, in a way, a golden mine to live in this country.
Yeah.
With all these refugees coming and, you know, powerness happening and everything. So I started to work for UNICEF back in 1999, which was like the first real documentary job. And at that time I was photographing refugees coming from Kosovo to central Serbia. I was never in any war situation. Like I didn't do photographs in Kosovo or in Bosnia. And basically I'm not even interested to document the wars. What I'm really interested in is what is happening after the wars and how people live in that state of devastation and lost. So basically that situation was what was happening in this country and in this region, not only in this country, but in all countries of former Yugoslavia. And we are still living with that past. I'm doing that from late 90s, and then in 2005 I started working with kids, with teenagers who live in these multi-ethnic regions here in Serbia and in Kosovo, and who will be the future decision makers, because now they have like 16 or 17 years and very soon they will be able to vote and they will be able to decide about the politics and economy and stuff. And they grew up in the atmosphere of complete xenophobia and wars. And I started working with them on photographic workshops, trying to make them communicate through photography, because usually they can't communicate on the normal in the normal kind of life situations. So last year I was working in South Serbia with the Serbs, Albanians, and Romas. And this year I was working on Kosovo with Albanians, Serbs, Romas, Croats, and Bosniaks. And that was a great experience because they never met each other. They actually never met anyone who is like a Serbian or Albanian. And they were sitting together for 12 weeks and they were making photographs together and they were communicating. And that was really great experience. And the reason why I decided to start these workshops is because as a documentary photographer, you always have a feeling that you're taking something from the people. I mean, photographing them, in a way, you do help them by showing their photographs to the wider public and by showing the situation they're in. But also you do feel that you're that they are giving something to you more than you are giving something to them. And working with kids for these past 2 years, I really do feel like I'm also giving something to them I'm trying to be helpful,
yeah.
in a way. And definitely it is, and everyone knows that it's easier for someone who is that young to start that multi-ethnic communication in the situation like the Kosovo is. And it's also easier to communicate through art than through some other ways. So I think it's it can be helpful. It really can be helpful, especially in this situation that is now on Kosovo.
Yeah. Right. And in which way are you interested in memory or memorizing childhood as an artist?
Well, what I realized is that I really have a blackout in my memory. I can't remember many things. And I guess it must be connected in some way with that situation where we were living back in the 90s. And I started being very afraid of that. That I can't remember so many things. I guess that there are so many things back from 90s that I can't remember, and I guess it must be because I don't want to remember them. And then I started thinking about my childhood, if I can remember my childhood, and I realized I can't remember many things from my childhood as well. And that's why I started working on the videos and then photographic material that is connected with memory and memorizing the childhood. I'm trying to work on kind of mutual memory of my generation, which is more or less the same. I'm not very much interested in my work, in my personal memory. I'm trying to work in the mutual memory and try in that mutual memory to try to find out how my childhood looked like. Also, there is all that story, how you can construct memory. I mean, it's not really, when we are memorizing something, it's not really sure if that happened or we are just imagining that something like that happened. So you can construct your own memory. And for me, that is so interesting, and visually it's very interesting to make the construction of your own memory, yeah. or the memory of the generation and also when you're thinking about your childhood, you always think how, everything back then was great and everything was beautiful and you were beloved child and, your mm-hmm. family was completely all right and stuff like that. And sometimes it wasn't really like that. But you have only good images, no one is photographing, like, the bad things. And that's why I'm trying to work on the memory, because that's why I'm trying to figure out how it really looked like back then for my generation, not only for me, and to play on that construction of the memory.
Yeah, and the kiosk mm-hmm. project, which you are doing together with Milica mm-hmm. from Ozone, what is that, a kind of documentation project then, or?
Well, Kiosk is like a small non-governmental organization which is dealing only with art. And we are working only on the projects that have some kind of social connotation or political connotation, but not like everyday politics kind of. But what we are trying to do is work on the projects where we can stress out some important social and political issues, like connecting children from, Albanian and Serbian side together through art, or that Dasis Kunst project is also like a social research project where we are trying to figure out how people perceive art today in Serbia, because many people don't think art is that important, and we think it is. And so we are asking them, what is art for you, and trying to find out, is it important or is it not, and how do they think about the art. So that's Kiosk. It's not only that we are doing like a pure art, only exhibitions and cooperation with artists, but we are trying to connect art and social issues. I mean, it's not a novelty, it's just That's what we do.
Yeah. And how do you expect now the political and democratization process in Serbia? What is you as an artist maybe what is changing probably or changing in how there are new relationships between Serbia and Kosovo?
Well, I think I don't know. I think it will be very difficult to establish really good connections between Serbia and Kosovo. I'm really quite pessimistic about that in this moment, especially in this week when we have all these new negotiations and everything. I think people from both sides are to blame, really, from Serbian and Kosovo side. I think on personal level it will be much easier because today we have connections on personal level, and it's normal. It's normal to have friends in Pristina. It's normal to, you know, be in touch with them. It's still not very normal to go to Pristina because people don't feel safe if they go to Pristina. But I think you have to try, you know, because, I mean, bad things can happen to you in Belgrade as well. But on the bigger level, I think it will be very, very difficult because the both sides see the same territory as their own country, and they just don't want that other nation to live there. And I can't really see how we will, you know, go out from that situation. I guess in 5 or 10 years everything will be normal, but right now, I must admit, I'm very pessimistic about everything, especially the
Ja, das war noch Anna Adamovic. Ich hoffe, mit dieser Sendung konnte ein Überblick über die Kunst-Kulturszene in Belgrad gegeben werden, ein Einblick zumindest in die politische Situation, die eben nicht einfach ist und sich auch die nächsten Monate nicht wirklich verbessern wird. Ja, Mikrofon verabschiedet sich, Felicia Herrschaft und zum Schluss noch etwas Transgender Music aus Belgrad. Bis dann, ciao.